Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're crushing morning miles or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
I loved Shania Twain. I remember she lost an award at the like People's Choice Awards one year to Leanne Rimes, and I cried so hard that my mother was like, "You need to stop or we're going to the doctor."
Welcome back to That's a Gay Ass Podcast, the podcast that asks, whose fault is it that you're gay? It is me, Eric Williams, and this week we have a special re-release of Matt Rogers' incredible episode. If you are a longtime listener, I hope you enjoy spending time with an episode you maybe have heard before. And if you have found us in the last year and a half, well, get on board, girlina, because Matt fucking Rogers is here. Side note, I saw Matt perform in Greta Teilman's show in LA a few weeks ago, and he sang so fucking well that I felt devastated at how much talent lies in that stunning body. Speaking of Greta, she's doing That's a Gay Ass Live show tomorrow in LA. It is finally here. Thank you for putting up with all of the posting about it. We just decided to book a venue twice as big than the last one and trying to fill those seats, y'all. And it's shaping up to be just so, so much fun. So look out for pictures if you are not in LA for that, hopefully this weekend. And then the announcement for the New York date is coming up in no time. We're getting into this episode, though, with Matt Rogers. If you have not yet left a 5-star review, why not take the chance, the time, and the moment to do that right fucking now. I can't wait to see a lot of you at That's a Gay Ass Live show on the 27th this Thursday, and for more fun gay times beyond. Enjoy. Zoom just let us know that she's doing her
thing. We love her. Confident girl.
We love her. She's usually dependable, sometimes throws us a curve, but we're here for her roller coaster.
Take me on it.
Speaking of roller coasters, can you kind of like get us into what happened at lunch here?
All right. Basically, I was at lunch and I went to the establishment Sweet Chick. This is a chain that is sort of popular really in New York, Brooklyn, really all around the country. And I just I thought 35 minutes would be enough time to like order a simple sandwich and get in, get out. And I quickly became aware of the fact that that was not going to be their timeline of acceptability. So here I am.
The chick was on a different timeline from you, but you know what?
And it's a sweet chick.
And it's so sweet that you're here, Matt Rogers. I want to say the fact that you were on That's a Gay Ass Podcast, I've said it to some guests before, but you need to know this, Matt Rogers. This world is better off because of you in it. This world
Shut
is
up.
More rich, full. And the fact that you are on this podcast, this
Stop
podcast is
now.
Better off for it.
Listen, I have to tell you, I'm honored and thrilled to be here. I can't think of a better podcast to come sort of mouth off on.
Mouth off on That's a Gay Ass Podcast, Matt Rogers. Well, I want the listener to know that you are in New York City and I'm in New York City, but one day in the near-ish future, you're going to probably be seeing me in Los Angeles. We are getting closer to making our date to move there.
Oh, when are you going? And what's the deal? Are you just like life change or anything concrete?
The long story short is that I have been feeling pulled emotionally, physically, universally. And then my other half, we finally decided that now's the time of just like to make a little change. We're in our 30s. It's now or never.
Oh, yeah. I have to tell you, it's one of the best decisions I've ever made. And I say that with no ill will toward the city of New York, the city that really made me who I am. I love New York City. It's just, I don't know how to say this. The humidity is unbearable. The subways are unbearable. A lot of the just sort of built-in ways of living here, you realize you don't have to live like this. Mm. You can go to Los Angeles and sort of like let things be a little easier. I mean, there was a time in New York where, because like I feel like New York like breeds like workhorses, And there was a time where if I didn't have five or six things on my schedule a day, I was like not busy. I was not busy enough for myself. And now it's like I'm in LA and it's like if there's two things on my schedule, I'm like full day. And I love it. I love it.
Wait, that is honestly what I think I needed to hear in this moment, because I have those six or seven things today and I had like 2 hours to not do anything. And I was like, God, I'm such a lazy piece of shit. I just need to be doing more. It's like that's not the way. That's not sustainable, babe.
No, you don't. And the thing is, too, like, I think that because New York City is constantly bustling and constantly things are happening, you can't get away from the noise of activity. It just makes you feel like you have to be out there doing things. But guess what? There's such a thing as being spread too thin. And sometimes I look back on, you know, my years in New York and I think, was I giving my 100% to all the six things I was doing in one day, you know, instead of taking a break, like actually eating lunch or, you know, building in time during the day to like exercise or go to the gym or like go shopping for food. Like there were times where, like, I didn't learn to cook when I was in my 20s living in New York because I was just busy all the time going, going, going. And I think it just like wasn't good for me because I was eating a lot of garbage and a lot of things I could get quickly and just throwing things in my body and then going, going, going. And now that I'm living in a place where it's just it's acceptable to slow down a little bit more, I pay attention to other aspects of my life besides career that need attention. And I think it's good.
So are you saying right now that you're an Equinox girly?
I actually am an Equinox girly.
I kind of love that for you, though.
I waited a really long time. And just because I couldn't afford it at all. And then as of the last couple years, like I'm doing a little bit better in my career. And that's another thing too, is like in LA, there's just more work in the entertainment industry. There's just a lot more going on. Whereas in New York, I was just happy to be paid at all. Like I used to freelance write for a few websites and it was like, I would do recaps for episodes of TV and it would be like $100 a recap. And I was just like, thank God I'm making this money. And now it's just like, it's different because my career started, or maybe my career was just ready to start at this time, but I have to associate some of that with moving to LA because it just changed when I moved to LA. Not saying that like if you move here, like all of a sudden everything's going to be lucrative and incredible, but there's definitely just more financial opportunity I found, and that made it easier.
But could you promise that for me, please? Is that okay?
If you're not the kind of person who like kills those who make promises that they can't keep, then I'll make a promise to you right now that Eric, you're about to be a fucking millionaire. You're about to be a millionaire, boo.
Listen, speak it into the universe. The universe listens and then she delivers.
She's been spoken.
Well, I feel like I want the people to know that I, speaking of being in New York, first met you during our college days of it all. And then it's
at university, as British people say.
At uni. And it's been a few years since then, but
10.
It's fully 10.
We can say 10. We can say 10. I was thinking about that the other day because every time I come back to New York, like I'm in Soho right now, and so I'm like walking around and like all the old haunts, like, and I'm just like, wow, it's been a decade since I graduated, or nearly a decade since I graduated. Did you know that Dojo on West 4th is just fully closed?
But honestly, if you were going to tell me that Dojo was still open, I would have been just as surprised.
The gasp would have been the same. But honestly, like I just walked by it and I'm like, it's like that Taylor Swift song in Cats, beautiful ghosts. I'm like, all I'm seeing all around me are just beautiful ghosts. Like
Dojo is a beautiful ghost. Well, listen, speaking of beautiful ghosts, I like the ghost of my old apartment. I used to live on Thompson Street for 1 year. It was like $1,100 for a six-floor walk-up. And I think I might have told this to the Catherine Cohen on this podcast about when my apartment was robbed, and that was the only time it was robbed, was in Soho on Thompson Street. And
fucking brutal.
And talk about just New York brutality. Like I remember when I found that apartment, I did it all by myself because my roommate was out of town for the summer falling in love with Catherine Cohen, actually at Williamstown, separate story. But
is this a gay man?
Straight man.
Okay, so it could have gone either way, because gay men do tend to fall in love with Catherine Cohen, and that's sort of a tale as old as time. But straight men falling in love with Catherine Cohen, I know, happens as well. Just not as often.
Not as often, but it has been known to happen at least once or twice. So what ended up happening is I fought to find this apartment, and I finally got it, and I was so stressed I wasn't going to find anywhere. And then once I found it, I called my parents, thinking I was going to be like, I found this apartment, I'm so excited. And instead of that, I had an emotional release I wasn't expecting, and I was weeping on Houston Street. Oh. Well, which is, of course, again, tale as old as time, crying in New York.
Yeah, I mean, if you're in your 20s in New York and you're not weeping at least once on Houston Street, you didn't do it right, and you got to go back. You can't move to another city until you've done that.
You've wept on Houston and Thompson. I didn't know if I was going to tell you this, but I'm going to, because it has come up organically. I haven't really seen you for a long time, but I did see you at a time that I don't think you saw me, and it's for a good reason, because it was on a subway and we were on opposite sides. But the reason why I didn't say hi to you is this.
What?
I was crying. And I promise you that this is not a normal, like, I'm always crying in the streets of New York. It was just like during a winter of 2019.
Oh, really?
I think so. A friend of mine, I was with her on the subway, and I was just, it was one of the darkest periods of just like, I just finished a big job, and just like,
yeah.
Oh, it's okay. But what ended up happening, she was like talking to me, and I started to like unexpectedly cry a little bit. And I looked over and I saw Matt Rogers, and I was like, if Matt Rogers sees me weeping on this subway train, I
have to say, I didn't see it. I'm usually kind of in my own world on the subway. I'm not an observant person, but I'm so sorry that you were crying. And I want you to know that had I seen you crying, I would have been there for you. I really would have.
Thank you, Matt.
Oh my God. I'm so heartbroken.
Well, and I have to tell you, there is.
Why were you crying?
I was crying.
Was it just the job of it all, emotional release, or was it a relationship related?
You know what it is? If I'm being very honest with you, is that it was a perfect storm of, I got back to the city from doing this show, and I was depressed for being unemployed, but also
sure.
My depression led to my relationship having a tough moment, and we were planning our wedding. And so I was feeling so many pressures of the world, really, of, you know, are you a piece of shit career-wise? Are you a piece of shit in your relationship, and you're supposed to have this like beautiful wedding? Like, I was like having all of these crazy thoughts. And so the pressure of it all. And also it was February in New York City. I'm like, who isn't devastated?
Do you remember what subway line it was?
I think we were heading to Brooklyn, and it might've been, was it the G?
To cry on the G.
To cry on the G. That's dark. Dark days.
Yeah.
But the happy ending is that we, like, I had to address the darkness and just, like, you know, made sure I was talking in therapy, made sure I boo, 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 and then ended up, like Matt and I got, my husband and I got stronger at that point. Like, career stuff worked out. It just, like, it was a low point.
Well, we love to hear it. And honestly, like, I always feel like, I almost laugh when I look back at those times, like the misery of New York, like crying on subways. Like, there were days when I thought my life was truly over around 2018, 2019, because that, I think we're the same age, was our return to Saturn, babe. And times were thick and times were tough, but they ended. And I'm happy that you are doing better and gonna do this move to LA, because I'm telling you, it's the choice. It's the choice.
It is the choice. And you know what's funny is about the Saturn return is that I actually, so when I turned 30, it was 2 weeks before my wedding. And so I was just like, oh yeah, I'm getting married and I'm 30 and it's fine. But then my 31st birthday was a pandemic 31st birthday. And that's when the darkness returned a bit, because I was, again, you know, oh wow, I'm turning a year older, and what exactly do I have as evidence of how far I've come? Well, I didn't feel like I was taking as many steps forward as I would have liked, Dan.
Listen, I hate to like rub this in, but I think I had one of the last birthday parties before COVID. My 30th birthday party was on March 9th.
Yes, you did.
And like, I think it was like March 11th. No, it was like March 7th or March 9th, that weekend. And I'm telling you, I had a huge 30th birthday party, and then 3 days later it was like, if you're seen with even one other person, you're going to jail. And it was like everyone's going home, and I was like, oh my God, I was just with literally 100 people. Like, was I at a COVID super spreader event? Was my date of birth party a COVID super spreader event?
Well, speak now.
I'm happy to report that not one person had COVID from it that I know of.
That's incredible.
Yeah, I mean, it's literally a miracle. It was a big event in a small house. And so it really could have been bad, but luckily it wasn't.
I'm so glad. I mean, honestly, what a way to go out, though, is celebrating with the gorgeous. And then
truly,
mere days later, you're sitting at home just thinking, was that okay?
Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, this last birthday, I what did I even do? I don't think I did much at all. Like, yeah, and I just, so I was lucky to get my 30th in, because, you know, that's famously a big one.
Famously it is. I actually am having a flashback for my birthday for this, the pandemic 31st. It was like on a random Monday or Tuesday. I sat with one friend in a park, had an edible, and then just like actually felt very content because I had no other choice but to just be present in that moment. Whereas I think other years it's like, do we do the big thing? But it's like, I just like, you know, watch the world pass, and then had a little dinner. It was my first restaurant too in the pandemic. We sat outside at a restaurant, and I don't know what your emotional life was during, but I am canonically anxious, and it really took me until getting that vaccine to actually feel like not completely freaked out by the world.
Yeah, for me, it was a very up and down pandemic. I started it like kind of on a big upswing professionally, and also I was in a great relationship, and, you know, as the pandemic is wont to do, it kind of stopped things in its tracks professionally, and it's all fine now because things are kicking back up again, but I'm no longer with my boyfriend. I think that the pandemic like caused a lot of people to like really look at the situations they were in and find out, like, is it sustainable? Like, is it what we want long term? And you know, it's hard. It was really hard. It also kind of like accelerated relationships, I think.
Oh yeah.
You know, I had been dating my boyfriend for, I think, probably about 9 months. And then it was almost like we were living together. And I was just like, you know, it unfortunately changes dynamics. And, you know, I don't say unfortunately, because I'm happy to like have any sort of like awakening that's positive, and I do think it's positive and we're still close, but it was hard. I mean, like, you don't want to be cooped up and going through the stress of a breakup and dealing with life. I mean, and the uncertainty. And I just remember, like, you know, the election happening, and it felt like it was so long, and it was just the fires in LA. That was what's one thing about LA you're gonna absolutely hate is fire season. I just remember it all felt insurmountable. And I ended up like going on a vacation by myself. Like, I just like left LA and was like, didn't tell anyone I was going, and just like went by myself. And it was just like, I just needed to get the fuck out. But I don't begrudge anyone their coping mechanisms during the pandemic, unless obviously it was like, you know, lethal towards others. I took like a solo trip by myself and like, you know, did my own thing and like, you know, ultimately turned my life around, because it was getting weird there. Like,
yeah.
I decided to let myself go very early on. Like, it was like, oh, we have to be home for 2 weeks. I'm going to only eat pizza and watch Survivor. I'm not going to move. Like, I look at my steps from that time, and it's like, there are days I walked like 67 steps.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
It was horrible. I gained, I think, 20 pounds, which had never happened to me before. Like, not even when I was in college, I didn't even gain the freshman weight like everyone does. Like, I've always been pretty lucky. And this pandemic, like, it was very clear that I was 31.
You know, I mean, yeah, I was going to say, talk about a Saturn return. I do find it, though, like, it's always inspiring to me when people can still be friends with their exes, because I really think that's not an easy thing to do. I am not the type that has many of those. Like, actually one person that I lost my virginity to back in those NYU days in U-Haul, if you
go
imagine.
Off. Oh, I was in U-Haul. I wonder if I know the person.
Oh, you definitely do. But
okay, off air, you have to tell me who it is.
I will. I definitely will, because it was, gosh, what floor was it on? I mean, yeah, there's so many specific.
If you say 14, I'm going to lose my shit, because, you know, that's the floor I lived on with one Hannah Keim.
Oh my God. You know, Hannah Keim is listen, plug right now, everyone. Hannah Keim is a queen, and she does host a podcast called Brews with Broads. It's about women and beer. You got to listen to it.
Oh, I love that.
Yes. A lot of my stories on this podcast have to do with Hannah, because I've been friends with her for 20 something years.
Yeah, I remember. I didn't know you guys were friends before that. I just always remember you guys being close at school. And I always.
Yeah, like, we grew up in St. Louis together.
Oh.
But the virginity moment was, you know, in that U-Haul. I don't think it was 14. It might have been 11, so not too far off.
Okay.
But why am I talking about losing my virginity, Matt?
I think you're talking about it because you were talking about difficulties in staying close with exes. Yeah.
Oh, yes. Yeah, so that person is really, I have a really lovely relationship with, love seeing him. But one of my like big relationships that I have not seen, he blocked me like 2 years after we broke up.
Shit. Yeah.
We haven't seen each other in probably 7 or 8 years. And
does it bother you?
You know, it used to. It really did. It really used to, because part of me was just like, but I just want to see how he's doing. But I'm sure part of me just wanted to feel like wanted again. And like, you know,
yeah,
it's just so weird how you can have like been so close with someone. You could have been inside of someone. You could have been like so many things. And then when they're a stranger to you again, I find it such a crazy part of life.
It's like a death. It's like experiencing a death. I mean, even when you're still friends with that person, you see that person, or even if you're the one that ended things, you still have to see that person sort of out in the world.
Yeah. How do you deal with it?
You know, it's hard, and I try not to be selfish about it, because a lot of this is like, for example, like your ex blocking you on Insta and all that stuff. Like, he did that because he needed to do that. You know what I mean? And I think that if he needs to do that, it's, you're responsible to him as someone that loved him and like someone that was with him to let him have whatever he needs. And truly, like, I think it's really important to give people space and time and also boundaries. I mean, it's something that's really hard for me as someone who's got like codependent relationships on top of codependent relationships in my life. Like, I guess I'm someone that really likes relying on someone else, or really likes having like positive, you know, reinforcement all the time. Like, I really like to be reassured.
Oh, me too,
I think,
Matt.
And so that's like a source where you can get that when that goes away, it's almost like part of me has to watch like getting emotionally fulfilled from a person that I'm no longer in a relationship with. Because it's so true. Like, you can be the closest person in the world. It's your best friend, and you're their support system, and they're your support system. And then just because you break up because one aspect of the relationship didn't work, or you think that something else should be working better, like, you still lose those other things. And it's important to, I think, notice and recognize that a breakup is a breakup, and it's, you can't expect or force someone to be there for you in the way that they always were. It's an adjustment. That's part of the grieving process, I think.
But also, like, talking about always needing positive reinforcement, I'm actually, Matt and I are apart for 2 weeks right now, and for the first time since the pandemic started. And I realized my thoughts were going a little more crazy than normal. And I realized it's because I don't have a person there to constantly validate me and constantly give me positive reinforcement.
Right.
And the codependency of it all is very, very relatable. I don't know if it's because, wait, Are you Italian? Is that right?
I'm Greek.
Greek. Okay. Is it the Greek thing? Is it a?
No. I think it's just a crazy thing. I'm like Pisces. I thought you were gonna ask about astrology. I was like, oh, I'm a dripping wet Pisces. I'm a Pisces rising Pisces Cancer moon, which means I could start crying at any second.
Wow.
Like, it means get away from me is what it means. Like, I'm needy. I'm very emotional and sensitive. And I say this with love for myself. I think there's a lot of good things about me too, but I'm very, you know, I'm a lot. I require a lot, and I say that not to scare people away, but, you know, I think that, you know, when they say in a relationship there's like a flower and a gardener, I'm a flower. And
I haven't heard that, but I love that so much.
Yeah. My ex kind of brought that to my attention. He was like, you know, in relationships there's a flower and there's a gardener, and you're a flower and I'm a gardener. And I was like, yeah.
Oh, wait, so I'm a flower too.
But the fact is, I think he was more of a flower than he was willing to admit.
Oh, he wanted to bloom, but you wanted him to water.
Yeah.
But that's the thing. I think there's always one person in the relationship that's a little needier or needs more of the watering and maybe some extra soil.
Well, the thing is, I think that was like, I think he was the one that brought that to my attention, but I think that was a mischaracterization of our relationship, if I'm being honest, and I'm wearing my goggles, my good goggles, looking back on it. But I do think that that's true. And I think in every good relationship, there should be someone who is there probably as a flower and a gardener, and like ultimately you both want to grow into gardeners and be able to water each other, but you know, for some people it's harder.
Absolutely.
I think that I think that my positive function in relationships, if I have to examine it, is I think I make life more fun. I think I like have positive things that I bring to things. I'm very loving, but I think if I look back on my relationships, I definitely, I think I haven't been ready to be in them because I wasn't ready to not put myself first. And so now that I'm able to move forward and know that's true, I think it'll just be more fair for the next person I date because
totally.
I think I went for such a long time, like, because you're like gay or closeted or whatever, or like insecure. I went for such a long time never ever having a boyfriend, and there were times when I was like, I'll never have one because I just thought maybe I'll be too difficult to date. I'm not ready. And then when I got one, I was so excited about having one. It wasn't until way into the relationship that I was examining whether or not it was right for me and whether or not I was a complete person enough to be in one. And obviously, when you're in your fucking mid 20s, like, you're not.
No.
And people are in them all over the world, and good for them if they're ready to do that. I just realized, like, you know, all throughout my 20s, I wasn't figured out enough or realized enough or knew enough about myself to actually be fair to another person in a relationship. And so I'm moving forward with that and trying to get better.
Yeah, it's also so emotionally intelligent and evolved to me. And I think that's a great way to be, is like knowing that maybe you're not ready versus having zero idea you're not ready, but just like continually making people suffer through people, because there's other people that do that. And I think, like, man, a communicative man is just, ooh, is that a gold mine in this world?
Well, you know what's funny now, like, even when I'm dating early on, like, and someone asks me questions about myself, like, I think, like, even like a few years ago, I would have been doing some sort of performance. Like, it's so funny. I was just talking the other day, I think I was talking to I was talking to my friend Sudi about this, and I was like, do you remember in our 20s when we used to drink IPAs? And then I remembered, like, when I was on OkCupid when I was like 22, like, which I'm really curious to see if my profile is still up, because you have to fill out all your interests and everything like that. And I remember one of my four interests was drinking IPAs, and it's like, those beers make me so tired. I don't even like the taste of IPA. I don't like the taste of hoppy beer at all. But I think I was doing it because I wanted to appear a certain way. Maybe it was like a mask drag performance thing. Maybe it was I just wanted some connection with, like, straight culture dating. Maybe I wanted guys to know that I was, like, rather meet up at a bar that was more general population than like a gay bar. Like, at the time, I just wasn't really settled in myself. And so it's so funny because that was an obvious way I was, like, parading around an untruth about myself and being dishonest about who I was romantically. But that still happens in little tiny micro ways. And so now when I'm dating, I just try to be honest as fuck.
Yeah,
from the beginning, because you're going to have to be at some point.
Exactly. And, like, once the facade comes down, it's like, this is who I, like, this is me. I remember, and I truly am not proud of this, but I identify with you, of the mask sort of, you know, facade when I was first in my 20s trying to date outside of after college, I was like, you know, was one of those people that did want to find someone that was a little more masculine. And I told myself that to be with someone. And then I realized as I was dating and when I started to meet people that I was very interested in that wasn't masked, I was like, that's definitely when the mirror was put up to my face. And I was like, wait a minute, this is an amazing person that I am trying to limit based on my own fucked up growing up being told what it means to be a man. And I luckily was able to let go of that, but I think a lot of people, it takes them too long to let go of the things that they are trying to find, because, well, they were told to find something like that.
Yeah, and people aren't aware of it. I think that people aren't aware of, like, how colonized our desires are, you know what I mean? Like, I used to think, I think it was subconscious, and then I became more conscious of it. But I was like, well, I can't date this femme person because what would my dad think? Or I have to really, now that I've come out of the closet, like, that's enough. Like, I can't rock the boat too much. So let's find someone that drinks IPAs. You know what I mean? Like, it's fucked up. It's lame. It's like almost definitely internalized racism and homophobia. It's like all these things. Like, it's just really garbage. And so as you move through life and mature and get to know yourself, I think I'm always saying this, it's like, you come out of the closet, and that's one thing, and that's like literally 1% of the work, because then you have to come out with your interests and your opinions, and you have to come out with your natural inclinations and what you're actually attracted to, and you sort of meet yourself outside of what you've been curated to be by society and by your family and by like your surroundings growing up, especially, you know, I mean, I grew up on Long Island. Like it was, and like there's still things about me that are just like internalized from that culture, not in harmful ways, just like in little social ways. Like, you know what I mean? Like even the way I speak sometimes, like
right.
If even one drink, it'll be coffee, not coffee. You know what I mean? Like it's just like that. But what I mean is to say, it takes a very long time to not only become who you are, but get adjusted to who you are and then be able to like introduce that person to other people. So that's why I try to cut myself some slack about, you know, being like quote unquote difficult in my first couple relationships is because I didn't know what the fuck to do. Mm. No one ever told me. I didn't even know how to use my butt for sex until like my mid to late 20s. Like, come on. Like, we're delayed.
We need a birds and the birds conversation. It's so unfair that queer people have to like figure it out for themselves when there's all these illustrated books. Hopefully none of my parents or in-laws are listening to this part, but like and if you are, just skip like 20 seconds. But like when I first was dating, I just never knew about butt stuff in terms of my own. And then my first relationship was solely a T to T. And then as I move forward in life, I had to literally learn that it is okay to, you know, scratch my back and scratch yours. But I didn't know how. And I had to like go through the Olympic trials of figuring this out. And I finally then put myself through school, went to Babeland, got the stuff. And it took me, I'm not exaggerating, like 3 years to figure out how to actually do it. And I wish I had learned earlier, but again, some people don't learn at all and they need to.
I mean, I think that it's just, no one needs to do anything, but I would say it feels nice to be able to have intercourse. You know what I mean? Like, it feels nice to be able to feel. I remember when I was like frauding my way through New York when I was like in my early 20s. I'm not even kidding. Like, I was always just like, I feel like something's missing. Like, I'm not really connecting sexually. Like, I feel like I'm not like having sex or making love to these guys that I really want to like fuck. And I always felt like empty after my hookups. And then, yeah, with time, I sort of figured it out. And like, I've had lots of fulfilling relationships where that was not a thing. I've had many a great hookup where that was not a thing. I didn't have like a dick in my ass or whatever and was fine. But when I figured out how to enjoy that, you know, and it's still a journey sometimes, aka it does hurt every single time until you get used to it. I felt enriched by it, but no one was out here helping me. I certainly didn't have any gay mentors. You know what I mean? Like I didn't have any television or media that was talking about that. Certainly wasn't educated on it in any form of education that I went to, and I'm a well-educated person. So it was just like, it really felt like you were out here thrown to the wolves. And there's also a lot of misinformation out there, a lot of fear around sex, because I think that we are like that sort of last generation that was like without prep when we were younger. Yeah. So it was very scary. I remember I had a lot of very anxiety ridden visits to, you know, my doctor to get an HIV test. And it's just, it was a mind fuck. It was a
I unfortunately still really have to deal with that stuff of just like, of being so deeply afraid of like, if I like look at someone. I have a story that I basically thought I had something and I truly didn't even know to think what it was, but my body started to actually physically react out of the fear. And I started to, I truly can't explain this why, but it was such a psychosomatic thing. I started to pee, kept having to pee. And then that my brain told myself that meant I did have something. And I kept like peeing and freaking out and had like panicking. And I went to the doctor and they were like, "You're completely fine. Stop freaking out." But like it really does plague my mind. And like it's true. You just have to work through so many layers of what we've been told and what is expected of us. And I have to say, like, the fact that you said you've been frauding, or you were frauding through New York, I think, is...
Oh, please. I was, like, dry humping anyone I could touch. Like, it was just, like, I remember, like, oh, my gosh. Like, some of the guys that I hooked up with when we were in college, like, I wonder if they look back on that and was like, he didn't know what the fuck he was doing. And then I'm like, no, Matt, that is you again, getting in your own head, making things more difficult for yourself. No one knew what the fuck they were doing.
No one acted.
Like, and it's fine. It's also not a big deal. And I'm happy for, like, whatever, Gen Z, that, like, you know, the fucking asshole is, like, a place that they want to endeavor to go very early. Like, love to hear this, like, sort of movement of rimming. I remember the first time I got my ass eaten in college, like, was this kid I was in a dorm with, and, like, he ate my ass, and I was like, whoa, what are you doing? And he was like, I didn't even know it was a thing. He was like, oh, I just like to do that. And I was like, yeah, it's literally, it felt insane. It was so good. And I was just like, wow, I didn't know I fucking loved this. And I, like, I mean, like, it's just crazy. Like, I remember, like, even when I was younger, like, the first time I ever saw, like, a gay porn, like, a dick in an ass, I was like, they do that?
Yeah.
And my cousin, who I was watching it with, my straight cousin, was like, yeah, that's how they fuck. And I was like, oh, my God, that's horrible.
Wait, is your straight cousin a guy or a girl?
Guy.
Oh,
it was just, like, fun for him. He was like, now let's watch gay porn. And I was like, okay. And I literally, like, he was just, like, fascinated by it, I think. And, like, it was, like, this, like, you know, taboo of, like, we're going to go on the computer and watch porn. And then we just meandered over to the gay site. And, like, I remember I got, like, a raging hard on. And he was like, are you hard right now? Because if you are, that means you're gay. And I was like, I'm not. I was like, rock hard.
Anyway. Soaking wet. Well, listen, truly. I could, of course, talk about rimming for the next hour, but I do want to ask the famous podcast question, Matt Rogers.
Yeah.
Whose fault is it that you're gay, Matt? Who do we blame?
Who do I blame for my gayness? You know, it's an interesting question. I would say that one of the reasons that I'm gay in the way that I am is because my parents, so I guess we're blaming them. So thank you, parents. I love being gay now. Couldn't always say that. But my parents would not allow me to watch MTV because it was like every time I had on MTV, it was like always Spring Break, which was like, remember Spring Break MTV?
Oh,
it was like,
yeah,
it was like aggressively like hetero sort of like Miami Beach rager events, like with, like, you know, Jenny McCarthy hosting or whatever the fuck, and like the TRL,
like, the
hosts,
hottest, like, ripped guys you've ever seen.
Yeah. Oh. Like Carson Daly in like a full denim suit in the middle of Miami, like while everyone around him is in like a bikini or like board shorts, like raging. But that was like a really horny, aggressively like anti-mom scene, and so she would come in and be like, you're not watching this. And I was like, but I love music and it's music television, like this is what I want to be watching. And she was like, then watch VH1. So instead of watching MTV where it was like, you know, all like the youth culture and straight culture, I watched like VH1. So I was exposed to like Celine Dion and Mariah Carey and Shania Twain and like this sort of more mature adult female sexuality, and also diva worship. So I remember when Divas Live happened, like I was ready, because I remember that it was like the 98 Divas Live, and this was like right when I started to culturally like more gay things, because I think the second I saw Kate Winslet turn around in that hat in Titanic, I knew something was different about me. I was like, I'm not interested in her sexually, but I am very interested in the framing. I'm very interested in the hat. I'm very interested in her makeup. I'm very interested in her gorgeous red hair. I'm very interested that her first line in this movie is, it doesn't look as big as the Mauritania. Like a complaint. Like, I'm very interested in like everything that's going on here. Like the reveal of her breasts in that scene where he's drawing her. I'm interested in her power in the scene. So I guess now I'm titter-tattering over to like Kate Winslet's also to blame, but which we love because we're in the Winslet Renaissance.
I mean, the car moment with her, the hand on the window, I think that is maybe one pinpointed moment for me. Genius.
And also like to pretend that Leonardo DiCaprio at like 19 on that ship was going to be any good at sex, like, so funny to me. But it was in Titanic fever had sort of taken over, and so that's when I started to really get into Celine Dion because of My Heart Will Go On, and I was such a stan, and she was on VH1 all the time. She couldn't have been bigger. And then I really got into Mariah Carey, and that's when like my lamb status really started. And I also loved Shania Twain. I loved Shania Twain. I remember she lost an award at the like People's Choice Awards one year to Leanne Rimes, and I cried so hard that my mother was like, you need to stop or we're going to the doctor. She was like, this is like not okay. Like, you can't be crying because Shania Twain lost favorite country female artist to Leanne Rimes at the People's Choice Awards and you're seven. Like, it's not something we're going to tolerate.
7 years old. I mean, losing your goddamn mind.
Literally, like, standing Aretha Franklin at Divas Live. Like, I think, honestly, it was because my mother was like, you can't watch MTV. You have to watch VH1. And it was like this female beltress adult contemporary diva worship that I pivoted to. And then I, like, got all my friends at school involved in. I remember when we were little, we would have R&R time, like relax and read or write. Like, and I would like write in my book. Like, I had a composition notebook that was literally filled with lyrics of songs by like Mariah Carey, Toni Braxton, like all these things. And they weren't my own stories. And we had to turn them into our teacher. And I didn't know that. So I had to turn the book into my teacher. And I guess she wasn't a fan of this type of music because she wrote back to me in my book and she said, Matthew, your stories are so beautiful. And it was literally like The Roof by Mariah Carey, the lyrics. I'm not even kidding you. And she was like, I'm like literally like my all. Like, she, my teacher thought that me at eight just used the words vividly emblazoned in my mind. Like, and she was like, you're so talented. Your stories are so beautiful and they're so heartfelt and you really have such talent. And I literally, I never understood why this teacher loved me so much. And then I'm realizing, oh, it's because she thought I could write like Mariah Carey.
Oh my God. I mean, you were literally using the lyrics from like Grammy winning music and your poor teacher thinks that a full 6 year old is the penmanship of a woman scorned.
Literally, like, and I'm like, what was she listening to at that time if she wasn't listening to that?
Let's talk about that.
She revealed that she was really into Jewel. Like, I remember I was in third grade and it was right after the Columbine shooting, and I could tell my teacher was like very shook by it because it obviously happened in a school, and she was obviously panicked because she thought it could happen to her and her kids. And I remember it was right after Hands by Jewel came out, and she made us get in a circle and grab hands and sing the song Hands. So looking back, I think that she was like, she had severe trauma.
Oh, yeah. From that.
And so maybe she was more into a Lilith Fair type of female musicianship than I was. I was more like, you know, the belt pop goddess girl. And maybe she was like, you know, just into more acoustic stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure as you were on Danny Pellegrino's podcast, and I'm such a fan.
I fucking love Danny. He's so good.
So good. And when he posts...
Do you know him?
I mean, I have like been social media fan, like in touch over the years, but like my dream is to have him on this podcast, and it's going to happen one day.
Oh, he's so great.
So great. But when he posts like obviously the Jessica Simpson stuff, when he posted the Jewel and Jessica Simpson, like
Who Will Save Your Soul?
Yeah. Going absolutely off. It defined I think a generation, but I also think it maybe scared some people away, but I think the real fans stuck around.
For sure. I mean, the fact is, I did sort of hang out with those ladies for a while. And then I sort of, you know, I liked Britney Spears the whole time. And I loved Christina Aguilera. But then it was like, it wasn't until I was in sixth grade that I really stand beyond those women. And it was Kelly Clarkson. Oh. So when I saw Kelly Clarkson on American Idol, it was like over for me. Because this was like right around when I was like, let's just say being gay was like vividly emblazoned in my mind. Like it was just like, it was a very much a constant panic and thought. And then I remember when she like started to pop off on American Idol, I remember thinking to myself, well, at least I know, and it's comforting to see America like fall in love with someone just for being themselves. That maybe that means that one day people will fall in love with me because I'm myself. I was like, maybe one day I'll be able to really be myself and it will be good. It will be enough. Because I really liked her humor and thought, wow, she's just such a good singer. She's doing what she loves and she's able to represent herself in a way that she doesn't take herself too seriously. And I remember like that was the first time I was able to take a step into like, you know, I know I really like this girl and I her music makes me happy and it was such a comfort to me to see her be embraced.
That makes me like even a little emotional thinking about like this young closet case being like Kelly's being herself and people love her for that. And people maybe will like me, even though I feel like I might be completely sent to hell when I tell people this. But maybe there's a chance people will like it because I'm just being who I am. And Kelly Clarkson, I hope she knows that she's done that for people.
I think that she might have an idea. I mean, it's really cool to see her become like this, like it's like almost having like a third wind type of intense fame. Like, yeah. Now she's huge, and it feels like she was really huge during American Idol, mm-hmm. and then really huge during like the breakaway moment, like since you've been gone and all that.
Yep.
And then she like kind of stuck around for a while and was always sort of like, you know, around, and like she would always remind you how good she was. And now it's just like since like the daytime show and The Voice, it's like crazy how famous she is.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's just, I'm not surprised, because it's like what I said. It's like, yes, she was very famous and successful because of her incredible talent, but also you have to remember, like, America fell in love with her, like, and they haven't fallen out of love with her. Like, it's so fun to see, and so it still ends up being an inspiration to me. Yeah,
totally. And I think that's why her show is so big now, is because it's people just like constantly seeing her personality and her fucking singing new songs. It's like, it's such,
relatability down.
Yeah,
yeah,
it is,
but also it's like this. It's like your cousin that has this crazy talent, and then when they stop singing, they're just your cousin again. You know what I mean?
Right. You feel like you know them, but then they go do your talent, and then you're lucky enough to have them in your life because they are that talent. Do you know, though, I thought that someone who was going to have a resurgence, and you maybe can correct me if I'm wrong, but when I was younger and I saw JoJo ascend to fame, and maybe I'm just thinking of the highlights, and that's why I'm going from Kelly to JoJo, but like when JoJo did Get Out, Stay Out, and then or Get Out, Leave, and then it kind of, she, I think, went back under the radar, and then it kind of has resurfaced, but she hasn't gotten as big as I thought she would. Do you agree or disagree?
I would agree. I mean, like, I think that she was so shocking when she came out being 13, and her songs were such bops. Like, you talk about Leave, Get Out, but then there's also Baby, It's You. Remember that song? Oh my God. Like, literally, her first album, insane. And then she had, oh God, what was that song on her second album? There's this one fucking banger on her second album.
Yeah, yeah.
You shot the bullet that killed me, and then in a heartbeat, and I was dying. That's the bridge. I look her up, everybody, because she's got, and also she re-recorded her first album like as an adult. Did you know this?
Yes.
And it's like so great. You remember like how good all those songs were. Like, it's
such a mind fuck win. And I know obviously you're a big Taylor Swift fan as well. And it's so crazy, Taylor, when you see the reimagined of the re-recordings of the old stuff, because it is both comforting, it's slightly haunting, it's also like you're being reunited. I also haven't recently been reunited with Jordan Sparks. I mean, there are
a killer voice, and also maybe one of the best Jenna's in Waitress.
Yeah. Like,
you have not lived until you've seen Jordan Sparks sing She Used to Be Mine. I think it's, and I know there's the version that she does, like, where she was like, they like recorded her professionally doing it, not in the show. There's one clip on YouTube of her doing it from the show. Like, it was like one of those like illegal Broadway recordings that they do. I'm telling you, like, the way she holds out the "Used to Be Mine" and like that, and like she just like literally wails it like it's a grief scream. And I'm like, she doesn't get the credit. Like, she's talented. And also, I think it means something for Jenna to be a woman of color, too. It's like adds more stakes. Like, it's just, it's from the gut. It's like,
it is. Really, and I was surprised when, because she also was in The Heights, I think, on Broadway, too. She played, she did a short stint as maybe Vanessa? What did you think of the In the Heights movie?
You know what? I was like really impressed by it all the way through. I like loved it. Mm-hmm. I thought it was great performances. Anthony Ramos is such a fucking superstar that it's unbelievable. He's so talented as an actor, as a dancer, as a singer. I didn't super connect with the drama of it. Like, I just didn't find that there was that much like tension in it. Like, I didn't think there was really enough like real conflict for me to feel like, you know, I was like, it was like a twist in my heart. But I will say the music was great. The performances were great. I just story-wise don't think it's his strongest. Like, because then you see Hamilton and you're like, oh my God. You know what I mean?
Thing
like,
is, I'm glad you said that, because when the show is one of the first shows I saw, or maybe it was like, I saw the show early in its run and I was just beyond obsessed. I wept. And I was waiting for that same emotional connection to the movie. And I think you're right, where there wasn't that tension there. And so the only letdown was I didn't have that same emotional release. But did I gasp when they danced or walked on the side of the building? Of course.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah, I mean, gorgeous. Like, but yeah, it's, I think it is one of the better movie musicals we've seen in a long time. But I do agree with the emotional connection of it all.
You know, I just think like, sometimes during the transition from the stage to the screen, it's just not going to hit the same way. You have to really nail like a diegetic, like the way that Chicago did. And I feel like In the Heights is a grounded story about like, you know, a neighborhood, and it's just like so that's like, I think, you know, I'm hopeful about the like throng of movie musicals we're getting in the next year, like, because there's so many coming. But these contemporary musicals are just hard to adapt in a way that's like totally palatable on screen. But yes, I'm really excited to be proven wrong.
I am too. And you know what? Speaking of like musicals and pure genius, I just need you to hear from my mouth in this episode that many of your performances, of course, I've been a fan of. And in an embarrassing way, don't you think I'm sadly stalking you? It's all through love. But the one lyrical genius that I still reference to this day is Gay Scarf. I need you to know this. during winters, we of course, always recite our Gay Scarf, Gay Scarf. But also, I'm the hottest who up in Whoville. It's so funny. It sounds so good. If anybody listening has not heard this, I know you have an album, right?
This is the sort of gag with that. I have this Christmas show that I do called Have You Heard of Christmas? And I'm touring with it again this December, and I'll announce dates super soon, but I'm going like all over and I'm really excited about it. And I always said like, it's my Christmas album that doesn't really exist. So I do have like a 12 song original Christmas album that I wrote with my musical director, Henry Kapersky, and like, it's my pride and joy. But let's just say that it was never a real album until hopefully this year. And that's, I don't want to say too much, but hopefully some cool things happen with it. Yes. And I should say that Gay Scarf was written by Dave Mazzoni. So we get credit to him, but Hottest Female Up in Whoville is one of my pride and joys. So thank you. Oh, and no, I really hope that people, you don't have to celebrate Christmas to come enjoy the show. It's really not about Christmas. It's really just like my comedy special that I do. It masquerades as like an obnoxious Josh Groban-esque Christmas special.
And listen up, as a Jew who played Buddy the Elf in the national tour of Elf for like 3,000.
To acclaim.
To acclaim, baby. It like, I literally learned from that show about Christmas. I was like, oh, I get it. Christmas is magic. And I'm not a Jew for Jesus, but I am a Jew for Christmas.
Thank you. And that's all we ask.
That's all we ask. Well, listen up, as we're getting towards the end, I do want to ask you a really important question here. If the world was ending, you could only save one character actress, who would you save?
If the world was ending and I could only save one character actress, I would save Betty Gilpin, because I feel that she is capable of everything, and we have yet to really see the depths of what she can do. She's also like become a friend of mine, and that's one other reason why I'm so lucky that the podcast exists, because it really connected us with her, and we had an episode where she came on and it was just a highlight of my life. I think that if you watch Glow, you understand how talented she is. Like, this is like a character actress like trapped in a leading lady's body, which is the best type of like Venn diagram. But she's truly amazing. The Hunt was incredible. Her performance was amazing. I just think she is the real fucking deal. And I say that as someone who, you know, is well versed in this area.
Yeah.
Hard not to say Judy Greer here, because I respect it. But I would say Betty Gilpin because I think she's like Streep level. I'm not even kidding.
I love, no, truly, I support that. And I think it's also beautiful, the lifelong friendship I see you and Betty Gilpin have. And I really do.
Oh my God. I mean, just a tremendous human being and smart as shit. And also a great writer and good person. New mom, we love. And yeah, just I could sing her praises all day. I mean, she does things that are inventive and also like deeply, deeply real. And she's funny and also like has a lot of depth and also like has done the work. Like she's like a real actress, but also you can tell that it comes from a place of fun and of not taking herself super seriously. Like she obviously takes what she does very seriously, but I don't think she takes herself super seriously. She knows enough not to. So that's an interesting walk to walk, but she does it. And I'm always obsessed with her.
Well, that's one of the most perfect types of people, is like the great talent with also not thinking that they're so serious that they can't make fun of themselves or like be silly or whatever it is. And I think that that is the way to go. Speaking of though, this made me think of a show that people keep telling me to watch and I started last night. Have you watched Call My Agent yet?
No.
Okay, so it's on Netflix. It's a French show and it's like French Entourage, but without the misogyny. And it's also the actual actors that are very famous in France. They play themselves in the show, but it's like, it's smart. It is funny. It is like crazy high stakes. Highly recommend.
Great endorsement. Ringing endorsement.
I mean, truly. And since we are just about out of time, I'm going to ask you the final question that I'm taking a page out of Danny Pellegrino's book, who asks a favorite Mariah Carey song. I'm going to ask you, Matt Rogers, what is your favorite Whoopi Goldberg movie?
Oh my God. I would say my favorite Whoopi Goldberg movie is Sister Act 2.
Thank you so much.
Back in the Habit. But I also love Ghost. I appreciate Ghost. And I think The Color Purple was an achievement, and I think that was her Oscar, but you know, they gave it to her for Oda Mae, which is also worthy.
Well, Joel Kim Booster was the first person I asked this new pod question last week, and he also answered Sister Act 2, and I'm starting to think, what if every single person answers that? But I think that's okay, Matt.
I think it might be okay, and I think it would make Whoopi happy, to be honest.
Yes.
Because, you know, she kind of like, over the past couple decades, she's really just kind of done The View. And we'd love to see Whoopi back in film. But, you know, she, like, tried to get Sister Act 3 to happen and they, like, wouldn't finance it. Like, apparently it's their opinion that people wouldn't go see it. And I'm like, I don't think that's true.
But see, I thought that was the case. And then they re-announced that it is happening. Is it not happening now?
I don't know. It's murky, which makes me feel not confident.
Yeah, well, let's all put our prayers up for Sister Act 3 and Whoopi Goldberg returning to our screens. Listen, Matt Rogers, I want to thank you for coming on That's the Gayest Podcast. It really is such a treat and a thrill to see you, and I'm so, so grateful. You're a motherfucking star.
Oh, I'm lucky to be here. It's my honor and privilege. Thank you so much, Eric. You rock.
I hope you enjoyed that re-release of Matt Rogers' incredible episode. We've got to have him back on soon. And speaking of soon, I will see you at That's a Gay Ass Love Show on Thursday, and in New York will be in June. Reminder to throw a 5-star review if you have not yet, and follow along at Gay Ass Podcast for more. I love you.
I really do.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're grinding out bicep curls, or muscling the couch across the living room, crushing morning miles, or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, Smoothie King has fuel to help you maximize your workouts, own your recovery, and elevate your game. Give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs with a lineup of delicious smoothies made to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.